Yeah, Tom, well, what's happened now is we've had the long-awaited announcement from the UK Data Protection Regulator, the ICO, of the fine. So that came in right at the end of May, and it's just over $7.5 million sterling. That's just under $10 million.
That was Jonathan Armstrong introducing today's podcast topic, which is the fine in the United Kingdom by the ICO against Clearview AI. This is one in a series of fines against Clearview AI. We've taken up the Italian fine in a prior episode, but we take up the UK fine because there are some additional factors that are worth considering for the data privacy, data protection professional.
We're going to have a quick word from our sponsor, and then we'll be back with Life with GDPR. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, back for another episode with Jonathan Armstrong. So, Jonathan, first of all, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Jonathan, one of the matters we've been looking at over the past several podcast episodes has been Clearview AI, and we've got some update on that. So what's new with Clearview AI?
Yeah, Tom, well, what's happened now is we've had the long-awaited announcement from the UK Data Protection Regulator, the ICO, of the fine. So that came in right at the end of May, and it's just over $7.5 million sterling. That's just under $10 million. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. Effectively, Clearview set up a big database, according to the ICO, some 20 billion images of people's faces. And they were scraped from things like social media. And the database, what happened is you could input a face, so a photograph or a surveillance camera image, for example, and the system would flag up similar faces with a link to where those faces appeared. So it might link to their LinkedIn profile picture, for example. And then the idea was that whoever was trying to do that match would look through those links and try and make a match. So Clearview had a number of possible business models behind that, but they have eventually settled on a law enforcement model. So they say, for example, that they have given some of the technology to people in the Ukraine to be able to identify the forces that are attacking them. But Clearview have had a long-running investigation into them in the UK, which has been a joint investigation with the Australian Information Commissioner. And I think we talked about that on the podcast earlier, but the new UK Information Commissioner, John Edwards, has followed up that criticism now with a fine. And there are a number of interesting aspects to it, one of which is, of course, that Clearview is a US operation. So this is extraterritorial breach of GDPR. And the basis for that, according to the Information Commissioner, is that Clearview is monitoring the behavior of individuals in the UK in this case. Now, this could, of course, be subject to challenge. Clearview might argue that they're not doing the monitoring, but that their customers, in most cases, law enforcement, police, are doing the monitoring, not them, because they're not effectively storing the pictures as such, they might argue. They're linking to them. But the ICO's view is that it does have the ability to discipline Clearview. And that's obviously a view that's shared by EU GDPR regulators as well in Germany and in Italy. And the ICO said, firstly, that ClearView weren't fair and transparent. They didn't tell the individuals that they were going to use their data in this way, and so that's not fair and it's not transparent. Secondly, that they didn't have a lawful reason for collecting the personal data of individuals. Thirdly, that they didn't have a process in place to stop the data being retained indefinitely. And as we said before, GDPR has requirements on only keeping data for so long as is necessary. Fifthly, that they failed to meet the higher data protection standards required for biometric data. That obviously counts as sensitive personal data or special category personal data. And finally, that they were obstructive when people made data subject requests, for example, asking for photographs, and that this could act as a disincentive to individuals who wanted to object, for example. So as well as the fine, the ICO has also issued an enforcement notice, a bit like a cease and desist, to say that they have to stop using the personal data of UK residents, and they have to delete the data of UK residents from their systems. And in this respect, that's similar to the action that the Italian regulator took, and they fined ClearView 20 million euros for the violations there. It's important to remember that this, I think, fits in with a general drive from regulators being concerned about AI algorithms. So in Hungary, for example, a bank in Budapest has been fined about a million euros for carrying out automated decision-making and profiling based on AI. And there's also some civil action in the EU over AI algorithms, for example, concerning ride-hailing apps, which seem to have a decision support system, which the drivers say isn't subject to human review. So a bit like those food delivery cases in Italy that we talked about in an earlier podcast, where decisions are made on who gets which job by a machine rather than an individual. And you'll remember that GDPR looks unfavorably at machine-made decisions when there's no possibility for human review.
Jonathan, a couple of points. Let's start with extraterritorial nature of this enforcement action. And obviously, we had to address that previously when we looked at the Italian enforcement action. But it seems like either you've emphasized this a little bit more or it's starker here, because it could be the potential for impact of UK or British citizens. That seems like a pretty broad standard, really, for a lot of different types of enforcement actions.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, there are basically, to oversimplify, there are sort of two limbs under GDPR. Do you offer goods and services to people within the UK, obviously, for UK replaced with EU for EU GDPR, or do you profile them? And here, it seems that services were being offered. There was a trial, for example, I believe, to UK law enforcement, and ClearView AI were open for business. And at the same time, at least the regulator argues, that profiling was taking place on individuals because their images were available through the system and could be matched against photographs, surveillance camera images, etc., etc. I think not every case will fall within the territorial reach of GDPR, but obviously regulators are keen to make that as wide as they can. And we've had cases on territorial reach in France, in the Netherlands, in Italy, you know, the Grindr case up in Norway that I could think of off the top of my head, where regulators have certainly wanted to stretch reach. And of course, it's a difficult decision for an organization like ClearView, do they challenge it? If so, somebody like ClearView, who's on the agenda of many regulators, may have some form of precedent against them. Ultimately, decisions like this for EU GDPR are likely to be determined by the ECJ. And for UK GDPR, I think almost certainly we'll see a court look at these provisions before long.
Jonathan, this is the first case I've heard you mention where part of the allegations were companies were less than enthusiastic about responding to SARs. And here it seemed that ClearView AI, if not actively fought responding to them, perhaps didn't do so in a very forthright manner. Number one, is this the first case you've seen where that's been discussed? And how do you assess the ICO's opinion around this issue?
I think it isn't the first case, and I don't think it will be the last. I think there is increasing criticism of the way in which organizations have handled data subject requests. And that sort of falls into two main categories, really. Firstly, those businesses that are somewhat obstructive in allowing data subject requests to be made. And secondly, those organizations that allow huge backlogs to build up. Now, in the latter case, the ICO has issued enforcement notices to a number of organizations saying, you're not doing as well as you ought to be. You're not putting the resources in place to deal with subject access requests properly and quickly enough. And so there are a number of organizations that are, if you like, on the naughty step, where they've been told to produce improvement plans and they're going to be reviewed by the ICO. And in the former case, I think this is possibly a scandal waiting to happen, in that a number of organizations are truly obstructive when subject access requests or other data subject requests are made. You know, for example, I know that one US hotel chain said that for the subject access request to be effective, you had to have it effectively almost like an apostolate procedure. You know, you had to go and have a special type of lawyer witness your signature and prove your identity, etc. I've seen others that say if you're a married woman, then you have to produce your marriage certificate. I've seen others that say, yes, we know that you have concerns about the way in which we've handled your data, but we won't address those until you give us a complete copy of your passport, and it has to be a hard copy and can't be electronic. I think the attitude of some of these corporations is pretty shameful. Of course, you do have the right and the obligation to determine that somebody is who they say they are if you've got concerns. But if it's, for example, a current employee, it's going to be very hard to justify taking their passport data before you'll answer a subject access request. And equally for banks, who in my end are at the very lowest end of compliance from what I've seen, to ask an individual for proof of identity when you ought to have taken that already under the banking regulations to open a bank account is, potential recipe for disaster. And I think that there is a probability that the ICO will get much more involved in this area, particularly when there's systemic failure. And I think there's a possibility that financial services regulators and other regulators might get involved as well. You know, for example, in the UK, under the financial services rules, organizations aren't allowed to put up unnecessary barriers to consumers for them exercising a claim. And obviously GDPR, would count in that category. So I think the lesson to be learned there for many organizations is to look at your subject access request procedure, look at your backlog, and address those, because I think it's going to be an area of hot regulatory enforcement across much of Europe this year.
And could you remind our listeners, Jonathan, the procedural step we are in? The ICO has issued a proposed fine and penalty and regulatory action. What happens now?
I think in this case, they have issued the fine notice, what's technically called an MPN, monetary penalty notice, and the enforcement notice. And so the next move, if you like, is down to Clearview AI. I hear, without knowing, that an appeal is, I think, fairly likely. I know that the management of Clearview AI have expressed the view that GDPR actions aren't binding on them because regulators have got it wrong on extraterritorial reach. But whether they decide to come over and submit themselves to the appeal process in the UK or Italy or Germany remains to be seen, or whether they will, you know, almost sit on their throne in the US and deny the force of the other jurisdictions again remains to be seen. I'm also aware of the fact that I think Clearview AI are facing some civil litigation in the US. So in some respects, they have a lot of lawyers kicking around the place at the moment, and no doubt they're thinking carefully about what their next step will be.
Jonathan, I am somewhat confident, but also believe we will be taking up Clearview AI again in the future.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that maybe the final thing to say is that appeals on procedural grounds are doing pretty well across the whole of GDPR land. So you could see why Clearview might think it's worth, tossing the coin on an appeal. There are a number of appeals that have been won, and GDPR is still taking some time to bed down. So many of the big fine cases are and will be appealed.
This is Tom Fox again. Thanks for listening to this episode of Life with GDPR. We're going to link to the quarterly compliance client alert in our show notes, which talks about this case. I know you'll find it fascinating and interesting. Also, I'm incredibly pleased to announce that the limited podcast series, Trial of the Century, the Enron Trial, was recently awarded as a special honoree by the Webbies. They are literally the Oscars of podcasting. So this is a huge award for myself, the Compliance Podcast Network, and my guest, Lauren Steffi, and the production team at One Stone Creative. I hope you will check it out. If you haven't done so, it's available on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.